Are we doing it?
We're doing it, Nate.
Oh, you gotta give me more of a high sign.
We are back from reporting from dressing room 3 in the basement backstage at the
live-ish
Colorado Convention Center.
Live-ish several weeks later now from the How Conference, but we're still there. I'm Donovan. I was gonna say super excited, but I don't quite have the vocabulary to match this emotion to a word. Debbie Millman's here. She's one of our closest and dearest friends, and we've never had her on the Reflex Blue Show before. We had her on the V Design Cast at least twice.
Mm-hmm. She did stop by one of our specials that we ran at one of the conferences last year.
That's true.
I know that you keep bringing that up. I don't count it. It's not like a real, it's not like Debbie centric. It's not like we can just hang out with Debbie and have some good old fashioned Debbie.
Oh, it's
time.
Because you weren't there.
Also because I wasn't there. Though we did get some great shots via the webcam. That was nice too. I appreciated those. Debbie, how are you doing today?
I'm great. I'm really great.
You've been traveling a lot this past week. You were just at the AIG Leadership Retreat, the Summer Leadership Retreat, which is in Chattanooga.
Chattanooga, Tennessee.
How was that?
It was spectacularly inspiring.
That's wonderful.
It was wonderful.
And you are the president of AIGA.
So can you believe it?
You know what? I saw it coming a while ago.
How long are you the president? It's a term job, so what is your
it's
term?
It's a 2-year term. I'm halfway through. Okay. And I'm convinced that the only reason that I have the job is because 5 people before me said no.
Oh, okay. So not the first choice, but all
no, I don't know how many. It could have been 40. I'm just surmising that they had to have asked somebody before me.
Well, Nate and I did not get the calls, if it makes you feel better. So we're above us on that list.
Okay, so 3 people then.
Only 3. But we've been to those things before. We know that, you know, AIJ Nebraska was there, but maybe not the same without Donovan Beard.
Definitely not the same. Though I love them, but it's just not the same. Plus, you're Nate, you're the bad boy of the
AIJ. Right, I'm the bad boy now. I like that. Everyone else has moved away. So
if I remember correctly, you practically got thrown out of one of the events.
Yes. And in fact, not even practically, but we can come back to that another time.
Actually, your most recent large-scale project that we've seen is you've got your new book out called Look Both Ways.
Yes, I do.
And what was it that inspired you to write this book originally? Because this is actually, for me, when I read it, I was like, this is a very personal book. You share quite a bit of your story with this. I mean, I assume you had to open up quite a bit, and I didn't know if there were things where you're like, I don't know if I want to write that, I don't know if I'm telling too much, or how the process on that was.
Well, most of the just so people understand the context of the conversation.
About what the book is.
Yep, this is a book of illustrated essays, and they are essays that I had previously written, either for my radio show or for my blog or for Speak Up. Various pieces that I had written over the years.
Right, so some of that, there was a lot in there that was feeling really familiar to me.
From Design Matters.
Right.
So my monologues for Design Matters. And over the years, a number of people, close family and friends mostly, had suggested the possibility to me of trying to aggregate the monologues and essays and turn it into a book. And I was somewhat reluctant to do that because I felt that they were already out there as pieces.
Right.
They were already monologues, they were already published essays to some degree or another. But one of my childhood dreams was to actually do a series of illustrated pieces, illustrated stories. And so I decided to write a proposal to How Books with the understanding that How would be the likely publisher, if there were to be any publishers, only because they were friends.
That's nice.
And I didn't think that anybody else would take that kind of a chance on a book.
It does talk, I mean, you mentioned like design and you mentioned a little bit and you mentioned like a lot of brands, but it's not really like a typical design book.
Well, it's not really a typical design book in that the common denominator topic is not really design, but it's living a life with design and with brands. And so because this was a dream of mine and I had recently taken a class with Milton Glaser where we were very focused on outlining some of the goals that we might have for our entire lives. I decided to take a courageous move, to make a courageous move, and send Howe a proposal of sorts. And so I sent Megan Patrick an email with the idea of doing a book that was illustrated essays. And I did one to show her what I meant.
Okay.
So I took one of my essays. I illustrated around it. That never even made it even close to the book.
Nice.
But I sent her one with the overall idea. And then I never heard back from her. So I thought, okay, one of two things. She hates the idea and doesn't want to hurt my feelings. Or, less likely, but possible, she didn't get it. She didn't get the email.
Sure. I mean, these are illustrated. They could be a large PDF attached.
It was a large PDF. And I am the kind of person that needs to be told no. I don't really understand nuance. So even if she did get the email and hated it, I still needed to know that she hated it.
Yes.
I couldn't just leave it out there.
Sure.
As a,
can't just walk away from that.
Not really sure which way it's going to go or which way she's feeling. So about a month later, I decided to write her again. And I just wrote her a note that said very succinctly, "Hi, Megan. Hope all is well. By the way, did you happen to get the email about my book proposal that I sent last month?" And instantly, almost as if it were auto-reply, she wrote back, "No, send it again, send it again." So I was very happy and relieved.
Yeah, that's a nice response to get.
So I sent it again. This time she responded that she'd received it.
Okay.
So I knew that she had it in her purview, mm-hmm. although I still didn't know if she was liking it or not liking
it.
There wasn't any real response about the quality of the email. And so a few days later, she said that she went through the entire, you know, the proposal and the sample essay, and she thought it was a real long shot for Howe. It wasn't the kind of book that they often do or ever do, but she really liked the idea of it, and she would present it to her editorial board, and she'd be back in touch in a couple of weeks. And so then I just waited, and I figured, you know what? I put it out there.
Yep.
I did what I could to get it to the place where at least I'm going to get a decision back.
Right.
And hopefully I'll get a positive decision. And a couple of weeks went by, and then a couple more weeks went by, and just as I was about to ping her and say, "Hey, Megan, how you doing?
Right.
By the way, remember that book proposal?" I got a letter back from her saying that she had presented to her editorial board, and they were interested in doing the book. And I was just beside myself. I couldn't believe that they had given her the okay. And I wrote back and said, "Oh my God, thank you so much. This is really a miracle."
Yeah.
And she wrote back and said, "Yes, yes it is. Indeed it is a miracle." So I was really happy. And then I asked Rodrigo Corral, the great, great book designer, or designer in general, he also happens to do great book design, if he would be at all interested in working with me on the design of the book. Because I knew I had all these illustrations that I wanted to do, mm-hmm. and I had all this writing, and I asked Jeremy Lehrer, who is the wonderful former managing editor of Print Magazine and the editor of How to Think Like a Great Graphic Designer,
sure.
if he would work with me to really beat the essays into submission so that they would sing, so they would be beautifully crafted essays and not just throwaway monologues that may or may not make any grammatical sense. And so Jeremy Lehrer came on as editor and did a magnificent job transforming the essays from monologues into these beautifully written pieces.
Because every essay is in its own completely different style. I mean, it's
yes.
unlike any other book I've seen, and that's why when I saw the screenshots, I was like, I need to get this, so I got my niece to get it for me for Christmas.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you. And so Rodrigo was an incredible partner in this endeavor, and was both Jeremy and Rodrigo were complete mercenaries. They just killed anything that they felt wasn't perfect and really pushed me to continue to make it better and better and better. And I did some of the essays. I did 5 different versions of illustrations and 5 different versions of how we wanted to sort of navigate through the book graphically, and ultimately came out with a book of 20 essays on the intersection of what I'm calling life and design.
Which is kind of your thing. That's a very, I mean, this is a very personal book though. You know, it's not only, you know, your essays about your life, but it's also your artwork being out there, you know, representing them.
Yeah, communicating. Yeah, yeah.
And as I understand it, reception's been pretty good.
Yeah, it has been. I mean, it's been wonderfully received, mostly. And I was really, really happy. I got an extraordinary review in Communication Arts, which really made my heart pound.
And well, you got an extraordinary review by the lady sitting next to me on the phone that had never seen anything like it before. Just seeing me read it. So.
Wonderful, thank you. And the New Yorker.
Oh, plane, I'm sorry.
Oh, I thought you were talking about your niece.
I'm sorry, no.
And I got a wonderful review from the New Yorker.
Right, was that the where you got like hot listed or?
Oh, that was New York Magazine.
New York Magazine. We were having an argument about that earlier.
And that was in the brilliant highbrow category.
Yep.
So it couldn't have been a better experience, and I feel very lucky that I got the opportunity. But for anybody listening to the broadcast that's really interested in fulfilling a life dream, my recommendation would be take the first step, make the first step. Because no one was knocking on my door saying, hey, Deb, interested in doing a book of illustrated essays?
Yeah, and you'd already done 2 books, too. And
well, this isn't the thing that necessarily would come to mind when thinking about the body of work that I've done. So this is something that I knew deep in my heart that I wanted to do one day. And in a moment of aberrant courageousness, I decided to take the first step. And
I love that even you're a little bit nervous about submitting book proposals to.
Oh God, I'm nervous about everything. Yesterday, speaking
in front.
Nervous
yesterday.
Oh my God, talking in front. This is the biggest crowd of people I've ever talked in front of, and I saw Nate for the first time since I'd gotten to the HOW conference.
Right.
And of course, I wanted to give him a big hug and a big kiss, and he wanted to give me a big hug and a big kiss.
That's right.
And I was about 5 or 7 minutes away from giving my talk about AIGA and F&W Media.
Yeah, what is the partnership?
Oh, hang on.
We'll get back to that.
And I had my little speech in front of me, and I'm following Bryn Muth, the editor-in-chief of HOW and the creator of this conference, who has the most charismatic stage presence
She's still
history.
Goes the same.
No. First of all, this woman is just got it in her blood. You know, she's related to David Letterman.
No, I did not know.
Yes, yes. So she's like an entertainment. She's like an entertainment family.
Just and the energy of a caffeinated squirrel.
Oh my God, she's just a goddess. So in any case, I'm following her. She's there, you know, in her like fabulous outfit and her.
Orange
dress and the hook-on mic, and I'm like, okay, I need a microphone and a podium, and so I could read mine. She's like the whole thing coming just out of memory, and you know, couldn't be different, more different presentation style. So I was very, very nervous. I had never made the presentation before. I am most confident when I'm talking about something that I'm fully, fully immersed and conversant in. This was the first time I'd ever made the presentation. And just another tip for your listeners, avoid making a first-time presentation in front of 3,000 people if you want to try to contain your nerves.
That might be a student tip as well.
Make Ray's
listen. Tip all the way through.
3,000 people, have a dress rehearsal.
Right.
So anyway, so Nate and I'm like, hey, Nate, I'm really nervous, so I can't really talk right now. And I'm just like, have my head in my speech and my pen still 2 minutes before the presentation editing. But the relationship between AIGA and F&W.
We should have done this the opposite way. You should have just presented to us two first, and then to the 3,000.
So right, exactly.
What is this presentation?
Essentially, it's a what is the word? How do I want to put this? Please edit this part out because I want to try to see. This is what I mean.
We'll make it
this
eloquent.
This is what I mean. But it's essentially an alignment of the two organizations because we have so many of the same goals about fostering the future of design and designers that we want to be able to help to promote each other's activities, to support each other's activities, to be involved in each other's activities. And so we have an alignment now between the two organizations. And because I'm such a member of the Howe family and the print family, and I'm also very much a part of the AIGA family, Bryn and Rick thought it would be a good fit for me to make the announcement
now,
about,
now
the,
from what
about
I hear,
the initiative.
What I hear, they're so merged, even Rick Griffey showed up to this conference.
He is here.
I have heard tale that Rick Griffey is in the building.
He is in the building.
I think he's dodging us.
No, he's here. He's here. As a matter of fact, there was a tweet.
Is this his first event? His first Howe conference?
I don't know if it's his first Howe conference, but there was a... I read Joe Isaac tweeted about Rick being here and AIGA being here and said, the world has now changed. And you know what? That's a good thing. Because as president of AIGA, the things that I'm really most committed to are inclusivity and connectivity. I'm so tired of these layers of what is and isn't considered cool or appropriate or serious, or we're all in the same field. We should all embrace what we all do. We should respect what we all do, and we should be doing it together. And not splitting up the way in which we do things and putting labels and hierarchies against it.
Well, and that's one thing that I've noticed a lot. This is my first Howe conference. I've been to two AIGA conferences now, and you know, many of those leadership retreats. But actually, not many. I think maybe just two of those. But I had always kind of picked up on a little bit of competition between AIGA and Howe, in the sense that they are both communities of graphic designers, and you would get the sort of tribe effect. I'm in the AIGA tribe. That's who I identify with. Or for, you know, for crying out loud, Steve. Steve is like represents the Howe tribe, and completely identifies with those guys. One of the things I found really encouraging while I've been here is so much mutual love between them. I put up a blog post before I even came here, like, okay, let's do a little AIGA conference versus Howe conference thing, and you know, see who comes out on top. But It's not really about that at all.
No, it isn't. We're all in this together.
Yeah.
We all need to be united and learn from each other and grow from each other and challenge each other in the best of all possible ways and be there for each other. If we're not going to do it for each other, who is? And so I think that the organizations have very similar goals, very similar initiatives, and so we should be supporting and participating in each other's work.
It was that part during your presentation where the entire idea of this partnership really coalesced for me. The simplest point to make, the most obvious point to make that was for some reason so difficult to see, is that yes, Howe's goals, AIGA's goals, those are the same.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. We're all working better to make this better.
And they're both kick-ass conferences, and they're different. And
yes.
And they are two different conferences that should be attended because they offer different things.
They really do,
and they're both great. I can't even remember the last time I wasn't at a Howe conference, and I can't remember the last time I wasn't at an AIGA conference. They both kick ass.
Now, since we last spoke, actually, your Design Matters has moved to Design Observer.
Yes.
What's the status there? I haven't seen. Has there been a recent episode?
I haven't seen one recently. No, I haven't done an episode in quite some time, at least 6 months. And mostly it is because between AIGA and the School of Visual Arts,
writing, you know,
and
Life
Both
books.
Ways and my day job, it's been extremely hard to add to that
list of
things that I've been doing. And rather than do something half-assed, I decided that I would rather put it on sabbatical for a little bit and then come back to doing it in the fall.
Right, and you said you've got a plan for that.
Well, I do. I have co-founded a branding master's program with Steve Heller at the School of Visual Arts, and we're going to have our first graduating class start in September. And as part of the program, David Rhodes at the School of Visual Arts created a studio for us on 21st Street in one of the SVA buildings.
You're not going to be recording from the Empire State Building anymore.
I'm not going to be recording from the Empire State Building anymore. So I'm not going to be able to say live from the Empire State Building. Although I could say live from New York City.
Well, and that is a thing.
We only got a few more shows that are going to be live from Dressing Room 3.
Right, exactly. So it's good to change it up a bit, right?
Yes.
But so, as part of the building of the studio, we created a podcast studio. So I'm going to be creating all of the podcasts, doing all of my live interviews in front of the students in the branding program.
Ooh.
And on location.
A little inside the actor's studio.
Exactly,
style.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
You so could do that, by the way.
It's going to be great. It's going to be really great. I'm very, very excited about it. It's going to be a state-of-the-art studio. We're also going to be able to do video casts, but we'll see. We'll see about that.
It's okay.
I love radio.
You're just setting up that option.
You look fascinating.
I love radio. But I love radio.
Do
I think
it.
There's something extraordinary about listening mm-hmm. to design as opposed to looking at design. So I'm very excited about it. And I'll be back on the air in the fall, but still I'll be recording in the branding studio, mm-hmm. but distributing and having all the podcasts live on the Design Observer
on the
site.
Design Observer.
Yes.
Observer Media page.
Observer Omnimedia.
And since we're actually, since we're talking to you from the HOW conference, what is your presentation at the HOW conference about?
That's what you're presenting on this week.
I'm talking tomorrow morning.
Doing a little work.
I'm doing a presentation about branding. I am talking about the topic, the title of the presentation is called Why We Brand, Why We Buy. A historical look at why we make and mark things. And so if you look at the human species, about 50,000 years ago, our brains underwent a major transformation to ultimately evolve into the brains that we currently have today. And at that 50,000 year mark is really the beginning of cave drawings, tool making. Mm-hmm. And so essentially it's a 50,000 year journey through our first effort at making and marking things with tools and cave drawings, all the way through to what we're doing now on Twitter and with iPads and so forth. So it's a 50,000 year journey of why we make and mark things.
That is not messing around at all. That is very ambitious. Actually.
Well, it's part of a research project that I've been mm-hmm. doing, a personal research project that I've been doing for the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I've actually presented it before at AIGA chapters and in other lecture environments. But because technology is moving so quickly and the evolution of our species is actually moving pretty quickly in terms of how we make and mark things. Every single time I do it, I present it, it's different. It's like going to a Grateful Dead concert. It's never the same twice.
It's not the same at all right now.
Right.
So the closest I saw was Rat Dog.
Right.
So speaking of branding, you mentioned your day job at Sterling Brands.
Yes.
You're the president of the design group there. Have you had anything that you've been working on lately that you're super excited about, you want to have people look out for on perhaps the store shelves?
Well, there are two brands that I have worked on the redesign of in the last year that I'm particularly proud of, but also really excited about because they're also brands that I consume regularly. And
okay.
that's the most fun for me because I feel that this particular product is so intrinsically involved in my life that it becomes like a personal endeavor almost. Mm-hmm. How do I make this thing that I love so much be more fabulous, more beautiful?
So it's Pabst Blue Ribbon and John Deere.
Right.
No, that would be me.
Oh, okay, sorry.
It's Häagen-Dazs ice cream.
Nice.
And Orville Redenbacher popcorn.
Oh, are you going to bring back the CGI Orville?
Are you going to bring back zombie Orville?
No.
The worst thing ever.
Actually, you know, I am quite a master popcorn maker. I need to let you know that.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of my biggest talents. I can make the most perfect popcorn from scratch. I have a popcorn pot I've been using probably for 15 years. I pop the kernels from mm-hmm. scratch.
Is it a hand crank?
No, it's not a hand crank, but I put it over a flame and I shake it and do all sorts of things. And so whenever anybody comes to New York and wants to visit, I will personally pop you a full pan.
Do you have any popcorn popping secrets you can share for those that can't make it to New York?
We did talk about how to buy bras with Ellen Lupton.
Okay.
So
yeah. Well, you can't keep it directly on the flame. You need to have it about 3 inches above the flame.
Okay.
You need to have a pan that's well seasoned or a pot that's well
seasoned.
Which
means you haven't washed your pan in 15 years.
No. You just wash it very carefully.
Yes.
And it's the same. It's only used for popcorn.
Right.
You need to have a cover that has a little bit of a vent in it so steam mm-hmm. can come out.
Come out.
You need to put 3 or 4 kernels into your oil and let those pop before you put the kernels, the rest of the kernels in.
Oh.
And it's often good to measure. Two things now, come out much better when you measure. Popcorn and coffee.
Yes.
Do you take the popped kernels out, those three out, before you put in the other one?
I would imagine they would serve a purpose of perhaps spreading the oil around.
No, the oil is there. It gets to a certain temperature. You add the rest of the popcorn when the three of the four kernels have popped. Then you pour the rest of your popcorn in that you're going to make. And then you keep it directly on the flame until you hear the first additional kernel pop. At that point, you have to pick it up off the flame. You have your pot holders, you're holding the pan, and it's covered, and you shake it. And you keep shaking it until you stop hearing the popping.
Yeah, until they're all
and it's an extraordinary thing because it starts off like, and then, then it's like fireworks, and it's amazing.
Nice.
Amazing.
And are we going to see like ads of CGI Orville Redenbacher doing this?
No.
Oh,
no.
That's,
you know, but
most of the popcorn that's sold is actually microwave popcorn.
But I do, and sadly, this is the thing that happened. Like, I was over at Donovan's house, 2-3 years ago now, maybe? I mean, it's been a while. And he and his wife cooked us up our first batch of non-microwave popcorn in probably 10 years.
Yeah.
And as soon as we had that, my wife and I were like, oh, geez, we cannot go back.
Yeah.
We cannot go back to eating this garbage that has been passed off as popcorn.
Right.
So then we went out and got our own popcorn popper, and for a while we had the hand crank Whirly Pop.
That's what I use currently.
Which is what you have.
Yeah,
and then I finally stepped it up to an electric one, which now makes me feel like I'm just almost microwaving popcorn after I've heard, you know, your amazing tale of how you put it together. But then that, even from Donovan to me, has then spread to my brother's family. They're like, oh, we can't do this again. So like all of our friends will come over, throw a party, make some real popcorn, and now they can't buy microwave popcorn. I feel like it's coming back.
Now, the other thing, when your popcorn is done, you have it all in the pan, you pick the cover up, you don't want to be too close to the cover because then all the steam,
all the steam comes
out. And then you essentially have to decant it in the way that you do with wine. So as you're pouring it into your bowl, pour it from about a foot or 8 inches away from the pan, the bowl. And then you get air into it.
You get some distance.
And then it has this sort of really wonderful fluffiness to it. If you're going to salt it, put some salt on the bottom. And then add popcorn. And then put a little bit more in the middle. And then a little bit more on top. I don't salt it too much because you don't really need that much salt.
Right.
But I have also put in some... I also augment... So I sometimes add truffle salt, which is amazing.
Ooh.
Amazing, 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 amazing. Sometimes if I really want a kick, I add a little bit of Tabasco to the oil. And then you get...
Ooh, I like it at that stage,
yes. It's fantastic. But it has to be in the oil, not at the end. Because then it just you get kernels that absorb the Tabasco.
Then you get one death kernel.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The rest of just
regular
popcorn.
It's like the Death Star, exactly.
Yeah.
And then also pepper. Pepper is wonderful on popcorn. So there you have it, my popcorn.
Wow, Debbie Millman's official popcorn recipe. I love that.
Good usable advice. We have one final question for you.
Okay.
Our last guest.
We have two questions, actually.
Do
so
we?
Have a, well, we have to pass that on.
Oh, yeah. Technically two questions.
Okay.
What we do is, since we're doing so many guests in a row, we're having the one guest come up with a question for the next guest.
Awesome.
So you can either tell us right now what our question for Diana Valentine, who will be on next week, should be, or you can hear the question from the guest before.
I'd like to hear the question first, please.
This one is from Russell Brown from Adobe, creative director. He's employee number 38 at Adobe or something.
Yeah, have you met Russell? He's crazy.
Okay. I like crazy people.
Well, he says, does Russell Brown from Adobe System know what he's talking about, or is he just making it up?
Both.
A nice mixture of both. I kind of caught a little bit of that. He was great on the show, though. He was very animated, very into it. He does some podcasts, too.
I think he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
I do, actually. But I think that it's fun to also talk about things that you don't know about.
Yeah.
We do. That's everything.
Yeah. We've been doing that for years, Donovan Beery.
All right. And do you have a question for Diana Valentine?
What's her favorite Scrabble word?
Love it. I feel like Diana's going to have... solid answer.
Because it's like, because you have the what your word is, but you also have the point structure of the words. Yeah.
You know what? I went next level on Scrabble when I got married. My wife actually gave me Scrabble strategy, and the last time we played was the first time that I beat her.
Nice.
Yeah. It's all about planning out and aiming, structuring those words. We could talk about popcorn, Scrabble. We can keep this going.
We can talk about anything and everything.
Yeah. Okay, well, we know
I
you're
feel
busy.
Like we're actually
thank you very
this up.
Much for your time.
My pleasure.
Debbie, oh my God, I'm so happy to have you
love
back
you
on the
guys.
Show.
We cannot, love you guys so much.
We cannot wait several years before we have you back.
I agree.
So we'll do this again
thank
as soon
you.
As possible.
Thank you.
Awesome. And I hope you enjoyed the room.
I did.
Well, I think that's going to do it. Thanks to Debbie Millen for being here today. I just kind of said that anyway. But thanks to everyone for listening. We will still next week be coming back with more amazing interviews from the Denver 2010 HOW Conference. Check out those and all kinds of other stuff at 36point.com. And we will see you then.
36point.com. Woohoo!
Woot!